Hello, welcome to episode 89 of Two Girls, One Book Pod with me, Rhiannon, and lovely Hannah.
Hello.
Fabulous. We're here to discuss Penance by Eliza Clarke. That was our featured read for this month. Don't ask me what this month is because I don't even know anymore.
We are way in the past.
We right now are in the past, but you're hearing us in the future. We've been remarkably organised and hopefully everything has worked perfectly, which means that we've done a buddy read this month, last month.
Welcome to the future.
Exactly. We picked Penance by Eliza Clarke. You have read Boy Parts, haven't you, Hannah?
Yes.
I have not. I picked this one up. I fancied it. It had a similar sort of cover aesthetic to Calla, and I picked them up at exactly the same time, and I kind of wanted to know what the differences, similarities were. Basically, there's like a group of friends on there, and one of them scribbled out, the head is scribbled out.
Yeah.
I just thought it was quite bizarre that both of them had such similar covers.
Yeah.
I think it's not really a spoiler to say they're quite different. So
yeah, very different.
They're really quite different. It's just the covers that are the same. And yeah. But Hannah's going to do the usual little synopsis, and then I guess we'll chat.
Yes. So certainly not for the faint-hearted. Penance Mm-mm. opens with a fictional disclaimer, which lets us know immediately that the fictional author of the book which follows may not be the most reliable narrator. This is Alec Corelli's apparently non-fiction true crime book, which purportedly tells the story of the killing of teenager Joan Wilson at the hands of three of her peers in their small northern seaside town. Through interviews with the perpetrators, the friends and families of both they and Joan, he builds a picture of the events that led to the horrific murder, the seedy online world that they become embroiled in, and the schoolyard politics that all end up in such tragedy. It is heavy going, very graphic from the outset, and as I said, certainly not for the faint-hearted, but the commentary that it makes about true crime fandom, online radicalization, and the struggles of female adolescence make for an incredibly in-your-face yet thought-provoking read. I feel like we're going to have a lot to say.
Maybe, yeah. Let's see. Let's see whether we have a lot to say. I think it's safe to say that both of us are basic enough to admit that we both quite like a true crime, little bit of a delve into true crime. I think that's just part of being a millennial in a Netflix era.
Yeah. And a podcast era as well.
True, yeah.
Just feels like there is the endless kind of recommendations of, if you listen to this, you might like this. And it just never ends. And there's definitely an element of quite a scathing commentary on certain sides of that culture. So there is quite a lot of different writing techniques used through the book. There's transcripts from podcasts, there's interviews, there's writing which has supposedly come from the girls themselves, online transcripts of online forums and things. So it throws everything at you, this book, which I found really engaging, actually. I kept just turning, I almost didn't want to stick to the schedule because I just wanted to
build
that picture, I think, which I guess is the purpose of the fictional book that we were reading, was to kind of draw you in and with the salacious details and build that picture as he does with the interviews and additional extras.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. That was a good element of it for me. We both said quite early on that the way it was written felt quite akin to True Crime Story by Joseph Knox, which was one of our featured reads back in 2021.
Yeah,
a while ago.
Yeah.
which both of us really enjoyed. It was set in Manchester, obviously. I live in Manchester, I knew, and was at university during the time that that was written. So mm-hmm. I felt really connected to that particular true crime story. So this didn't have quite that same connection for me, given that it's set a bit later, so then it's not my era. I think one of the things we chatted about in our Buddy Read group was the use of Tumblr as their kind of social media thing that they really focused in on.
Yeah.
Tumblr was not a thing for me.
No.
I think people are saying that Tumblr is kind of peak 2014 era, kind of round there. So yeah. If you're a teenager at that time, I was not a teenager at that time.
Yeah. So it's kind of 10 years too late for us, that I think.
I think so. I think so. So I didn't necessarily get as much from it in that sense. And I also felt that it was definitely a bit of a learning curve, because I'll be honest, I didn't have a clue what Tumblr was, and I'm still not entirely sure what it was and is. Does it still exist?
I think it does still exist, but I think in the context of this book, it doesn't seem like a very nice part of the internet.
Well, not definitely not. No, I don't really want to go stumbling down that rabbit hole, because it seems like there's a whole bunch of crazies on there.
Interestingly, I really did connect with the location side of this, because okay. It is northeast
it's
coast,
northeast, yeah.
And there was like the tiny town where I grew up is name checked in this book, and I was like, I know this place, I know that place.
Oh, cool.
And so Crow-on-Sea, where this book is set, is a fictional town in between Whitby and Scarborough on the north coast. Of which there are plenty of little tiny towns that this could be. It just so happens that she's named this one fictionally, presumably so that mad people on the internet don't go looking for it. So, I really did connect with that and the really deprived kind of side of it. So there was a heavy leaning towards politically talking about Brexit and the decline of these seaside towns and the political unrest around that time really felt like something I was very aware of. So yeah. I maybe got a little bit more from that in the same way that you got from the Manchester in True Crime Story.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
That's not to say that I didn't enjoy this book. I think I started off really loving it. Like the first half of it, I was completely... really enjoyed it. And then I think for me, the pacing wasn't exactly what I needed it to be. Mm-hmm. When we got into the sort of more, almost like the narrator, Alec, writes prose portions, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That he's like interpreted from, we don't really know whether it's from the conversations that he's had with these women or the various different things that he's had access to.
Yeah.
So I think from that point, it lost its way a little bit for me. But this is, again, something that we were talking about with our group, whether that is the fact that we were then reading from essentially a middle-aged man's perspective. And I don't know, I found it harder to get.
Yeah, I read a few reviews before when I was writing my notes of people saying that they were really annoyed when they got to the end and found out that, like, it might not be true. And I was like, but we got told right at the beginning that it might not be true. But so I think that because we got that warning at the beginning that what follows might not be accurate, those big, long, wordy passages, the huge sections where he was essentially just saying what he interpreted that they might have felt, I was a little bit out of it. I was kind of going... Ah, yeah, okay, but did she really say that? Did she really think that? How can you know that? I still enjoyed it, but I did feel like it slowed down a little bit in those moments because I, having been told he was unreliable, was not fully invested in what he was actually saying to me. I feel like it made me question it more.
Yeah, I think I took from the unreliable narrator part of it, I think I thought there was going to be more to the unreliability. I don't know whether you thought that I thought maybe there would be more twists than there were. I don't know. I think just from reading other books with unreliable narrators, we've read a few. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought maybe there would be more to the unreliability than just what did he want to get out of the case. I don't know.
I think it's a really interesting one to talk about. We usually do like a spoiler thing at the beginning and say we're not going to spoil anything. I almost think it's impossible to spoil anything in this book.
No.
Because from the beginning... Yeah, you know exactly what happened in very graphic detail. And I think there is a part of me that thinks if I wasn't into the darker sides of things, that you could very easily be turned off right at the very beginning of this book. It opens with very graphic detail of what happened to this girl. So you know the ending, and he very quickly tells you who was convicted, what happened to them, where they went, and we also know straight away that what he's saying might not be true. So there's nothing really. And even at the end, you're still not sure exactly. We know what happened to Joan, but we're still not 100% sure at the end who did what, who was telling the truth about what. He doesn't know, and we don't know if he's telling the truth. So it's almost an unspoilable book. It's amazing for considering it's like a murder book, where you'd expect to be huge spoilers to the plot.
Yeah, it's not a whodunit in any shape or form. It's not a thriller. It's not, which I think is what I was expecting it to be, mm-hmm. more of a thriller. So maybe it's good to go in knowing that it's not. It's more of just an exploration of true crime, I think, and social media, like you were saying, and how what it is to be an outcast teenage girl and trying to find your people, and when your people are crazy, then all of this horrificness ensues.
And when your people are crazy and some of them potentially are not even in the same country, some of them are egging you on to do things from the other side of the world. And the danger for a vulnerable teenage girl or boy to become just carried away with something and then translate that into real life, like, it's absolutely petrifying. And I think that's the thing that this book is about, more than the actual story of what happened to Joan in the end, which is quite sad. And I think it's one of the things, presuming must have been purposeful, that Joan is the victim in the whole of this, and you hear very little about her in terms of her story and who she was. She's very quickly forgotten by the fictional author of this book. He is so much more focused on the motivation, the what's the whys of the other girls, and she becomes like a side character in what is her story. Which I'm sure is the downside to a lot of true crime fandom and the fangirling that people do over killers and horrific people like that, which features in the book as well as one of Dolly's storylines, is the way that she gets embroiled in this very bizarre world.
Which I... thankfully have never come across at all, but you obviously hear about people who like write to people that are in prison and things like that and become or it's almost like cult status, isn't it?
Yeah.
People really get involved in these strange communities. And I actually, one of the things that I quite liked from this was that there were, you could obviously tell that she'd renamed all of these events, but pretty much based everything in fact as well.
Yeah.
So like all of the iffy characters that you came across in Crow on Sea were definitely based on real people. You had your Jimmy Savile character.
Yes.
who was thinly veiled disguise. That was very obviously Jimmy Savile. And like the was it Cherry Creek, what was it called?
Yeah, Cherry Creek
Massacre is obviously based in fact as well. Like, and the just how these people are hailed as heroes.
Yeah.
And something to be looked up to, and the whole fan fiction side of things, I just had no idea, and it was awful.
Yeah, I don't ordinarily feel like I'm a very sheltered person. I felt so sheltered reading this book. I was like, oh my goodness. I thought I was a weird little emo kid. And like, I thought I was a weird outcast. I was not this level of a weird outcast in any way.
Thankfully.
Thankfully. I think it was quite interesting as well to see. So obviously there's the kind of online world that Dolly particularly becomes embroiled in, but then she brings that into their real lives and their real friendships. And to see the other girls' reactions to it, to her face and behind her back. Obviously, to her face, they kind of were a little bit less forthright about their worries or concerns about it. But the idea that somebody who doesn't seem 100% sold, but can still be dragged along and end up very much involved in something that they don't necessarily believe in or know about, but just by virtue of this person being so charismatic and quite scary. But then also I think one of the characters I really probably was most interested in was Violet, who was girl B. Because she seemed like somebody who had definitely got interests in the darker side of things. She very much liked all of the stories of witchcraft and folklore and that kind of history of the town. And then there was the scene when she had the Sims and she was like torturing the Sims on the computer game. But that doesn't necessarily translate into her wanting to act upon that in real life. So then when you come to that scenario, she's the one who wasn't sure and didn't know what to do and thought about calling the police. And I felt like she was such an interesting character. I wanted a little bit more about her.
I think, to be fair, weirdly, I didn't hate any of the girls, which I think was probably done on purpose. I felt sorry for all of them. They've all had varying reasons for being socially outcast, and Angelica was a very interesting one. She's called Angelica, wasn't she? I haven't just made that up.
Yeah, the kind of the first, bratty one.
Yeah, the bratty
girl
one,
A,
exactly.
Yeah.
She comes across horrifically at first, but then as the book progresses, you learn more about her and the issues that she's had. Her dad was definitely a Nigel Farage.
Yes.
So I do very much enjoy the very thinly veiled pokes at these infamous
I think,
people.
I think that really helps to just ground you in it and make you know exactly who you are, like where you are, who everybody is, and where you are in history. So that divisive political character,
yeah,
you don't need any description. Once you've got that picture in your head, you're like, right, okay, I know who you are. And also then I know how you impact your child, and I know how you impact the rest of your community and what people would think of you and your child from the outside. So it very cleverly lets you immediately feel like you know that person without having to spend 20 pages explaining him.
So
I thought that was a really clever way of doing it without getting sued.
I guess you've got to be quite careful about that kind of thing. But I felt bad for her, the changing relationships that she had with her peers obviously massively affected her. She didn't really let it be known that it was massively affecting her. As an outsider, it was incredibly obvious that she was becoming deeply disturbed, shall we say. But I did feel bad for her.
Yeah,
I think I felt the worst for her, and I felt weird for feeling that.
It's weird. It does make you kind of go, am I on the right side here? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think there is a particularly right side, because Joni certainly wasn't the nicest character from how it was written. Anyway, we don't know, do we?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that would be the criticism of any of that kind of true crime, anything, that you, once somebody is dead, you can't get their side of the story.
Yeah.
So anything that you tell where you have anything from the perpetrator's perspective is like way heavily biased in their favour. Yeah. And that's what I was saying, when Joni just fades into the background, because there's so much volume of like information from the other people that we don't know how Joni felt, what Joni was thinking, because she's gone. I agree that I felt a bit sorry for Angelica. I don't know that I felt anything positive towards Dolly. I think it was alluded to that she was having, there was things going on in her home, and that she was very obviously mentally not well.
Yes.
But I also thought there was just something which seemed so cruel about her.
Yeah, for sure.
Not just in the act that obviously ended Joni's life, but throughout the whole of her interactions with everybody, it felt like everything she was doing was to just cause upset and pain and a little bit of disruption. And I couldn't quite feel sorry for her. And then even when she's given the opportunity to say why, she didn't take it. And you think, are you just that cold? And yeah, so she was one I struggled to feel anything positive towards.
Yeah. Yeah, I can agree with that. I think I didn't particularly warm to Dolly. No. I did enjoy it. I think the pacing just fell away for me a little bit. I'm glad that I kept going. But I think it's a little less than a 4 stars for me personally.
I think I went 4.5 because I really enjoyed it. And I think I agree that it slowed down a little bit in the middle, but actually towards the end, as it got to that real description of the night and how that happened and how it all kind of carried away, I just was like, I couldn't read it quick enough. I was like, I need to know what's going on here. So I felt like pacing wise, actually, I was all right with it. And I know it was purposeful, but I wanted 2 sides of the story.
Mm.
And you very much only get one. And it was one I knew I didn't believe from the beginning.
Right.
So I felt really detached from it from the off, because I was going, I don't believe you. I don't believe what you say. And then he's got his own story. Alec has got his own story. He's been fired from his newspaper job because of a phone hacking scandal. So not a great guy. And then his daughter, again, we're only hearing anything that he says about his daughter from his perspective and from what he feels. And he's he might have been a terrible dad to her, but he's not going to say that to us. So we're only getting half of that story. And I just felt like frustrated with the bias, which I guess I know that that's the point. Is that
whole purpose,
So I think in terms of that, like, I think she did it spectacularly. The way that she writes is really interesting, very clever. She's one of these writers that I feel like there isn't a word that's not really considered, and a visual that's not considered. There's not, a lot of them are quite graphic, but they're all there to make you feel something for a purpose. It's not gratuitous. It's to make you understand something. So I really think she's amazing at that.
Yeah. I think one of the criticisms that was levelled in our group was that there were a few sections which on the face of it appear irrelevant to this case. Like there's sort of backstories, history and things that probably could have not been in the book, but are maybe in there, like you say, to offer that sort of wider context and the moment in time. And I don't know whether you had any opinions on that.
I mean, I quite liked them anyway because I liked getting that insight. But I think I read the whole book as though it wasn't Eliza Clark writing it. And every choice that was made to include in this book was Alec's choice.
Right.
So I think it's more that Alec wanted to kind of flesh out this story with the things that he knew. He didn't know very much of what happened on that night. He didn't know what anybody actually felt or thought. He just had to write a book and he had to flesh it out with things that were maybe not actually relevant to giving us the truth. It was distraction technique and look over here, because actually I really don't know what went on. It's all to build a story and to make you excited and to have a narrative and something to sell my book. And if you make it creepy and put a bit of witchcraft and put a bit of Viking folklore in it, it sensationalizes it and it sells his book.
Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know whether I had a totally different reading experience because I almost ignored the fact that Eliza Clark wrote it. Yeah. I was reading Penance by Alec Corelli.
I think that's a good way to go into it.
Yeah.
You have to just completely ignore what it actually is.
Yeah, well, because she's obviously done it in that way for a reason, so that you read it in that way. And we did it the same with Joseph Knox. That you read that book not as a work of fiction by Joseph Knox. You read it as a book written by the fictional writer. And I think, that's how I went into this. And I think I'd probably really enjoyed it maybe a bit more because of that.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to say that to some of the people in the group that haven't finished yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although they're going to hear this in a month's time, so
well,
they
maybe
might have finished by then.
I'll just whisper a little voice note into the buddy group after this and just say, yo, I can tell you a secret. Read it. This is how you should read it.
I think that's a good idea. Very good idea. I saw on social media, just as a little side note, I saw on social media that Joseph Knox got a new book coming out very soon.
Exciting.
Which I'm definitely going to get involved in that. I don't know whether I should read Boy Parts. I don't know whether it's too weird for me.
Yeah, I think you might struggle with it. There is less... it's a lot more niche than this, which I know sounds weird because we've discussed that there's a lot of niche, like, fanfic about strange serial killers in this. But this feels more rooted in a world which you can at least put yourself in.
Yeah.
Boy Parts is very... I really loved it. I absolutely loved it. But it's like grimy art scene in Newcastle. There's a lot more graphic violence and weirdness.
Okay.
I don't know. So did somebody mention in the buddy group about the tampon scene?
Yeah.
It's a lot. Okay. And I think you would put it down at that point and go, no. Sorry, but no, not for me.
Fair enough. I think I'll just actually, not pop it then.
Maybe yes, read it, but do like a live stream video on the Instagram channel of you reading boy parts. You know, pulling like faces. The reviews that we've done with like pulling the faces. That would be amazing. I'd actually pay to see your facial expressions review of boy parts.
Okay, well, if I'm at a loose end at some point, maybe. I've got too many books to prioritize, I think, ahead of that.
Yeah.
Potentially.
She obviously likes to shock and provoke and make you really think with her writing. Okay. And that either is something that you're into or you're not. And I think this is maybe a little bit more mainstream accessible than boy parts.
Sure.
And a little bit more polished, I would say, as well, in the different writing techniques that she uses and that the way she frames the book, I think, maybe feels a little bit... You can tell it's a second book.
Okay,
so,
cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, there you go. So that's Hannah's tips on what to do when you're reading Penance.
Penance by Alec Corelli.
Exactly. Fabulous. Well, I've enjoyed discussing that, actually. I feel like I've come away with slightly clearer thoughts. So, thanks. And next time, whatever month that's going to be, no idea what we're discussing. So,
next featured read, we thought we might do. Can I say remember. It?
Yeah. What was it?
We might do The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo.
Oh yeah, I completely forgotten that I'd suggested that. But yes, yeah, I'd be game for that for sure. Because I like the Leigh Bardugo that I have read, and this is a little bit of a darker gothic take on it, as far as I can see.
Yeah.
So it might be a good smush up of two things that we like.
Yeah.
A smush up. That's new terminology that I've never used before. But you know exactly what I mean.
Yes.
Fab. All right. Well, in that case, I think that's pretty much it. And we'll talk at you later.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Hi there. Thank you so much for listening to Two Girls, One Book podcast. If you like what you heard, we would love for you to like, follow, rate, subscribe. In fact, just all that good stuff, please, would be fantastic. You can also find us on Instagram at Two Girls One Book Pod, so come and follow us over there as well. Happy reading, and join us next time.